If you get self-conscious while eating hot dogs in public, my new invention, the Glizzy Gripper, perfectly hides the hot dog as you shove it into your mouth.
Good morning, Sweet World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Tuesday, June 8th. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling with the homie in a nice t-shirt today, Tass Mellis.
Sup, fellas?
What's up, Tassie? Yeah, looking good in your purple No Dunks.
Dips.
We also got my top shot hot boy, fellow freak, Trey Kirby.
Ayo.
Hey.
Yo. The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friend.
And last but not least, making the magic happen, is JT.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team for joining us live right now on YouTube. Smash that like button. Leave your comments below the video and in the stream team. And subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. A couple new vids coming for you later today. New Top Shot Hot Boys, because Trey Kirby scored himself a Meagle pack yesterday there.
That's right. Got my metallic gold Lee Ellis MGLE ready to rip open sometime this afternoon, Skeetsy. And of course, we got the big news. The Wedgie Moam finally dropped. We'll get into all of it this afternoon.
Yeah, looking at about 4 p.m. Eastern time here on Tuesday. If you want to join us for a Top Shot Hot Boys and talk a little Top Shot. Keep sending in your questions and comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. Follow us on Twitter and send them in that way, @nodunksinc. We're going to hit the beach tomorrow. Yeah, Wednesday, tomorrow already. So you can join us live again on YouTube at around 3 p.m. Eastern in the afternoon there. All right, and finally, go grab your No Dunks merch, like that sweet shirt Tass is wearing, over at nodunks.com. So you can, too, do some great dips in your computer chair. Those arms are looking awesome. Okay. Let's get into the action. We also got another award handed out. We'll get to a bit later in the show. But first, rejuvenated Chris Paul leading the Suns over the Nuggets 122-105 in Game 1. Lele, get us started. Big takeaway from this Game 1 victory.
Well, for 2.5 quarters, the Nuggets were in control and looking pretty good. Jokic seemed to be doing his thing and Chris Paul was really struggling. And then it was a huge third quarter run that the Suns got super hot. Everyone started hitting shots. The crowd was going wild. They got back into the game. They took the lead and the Nuggets offense pretty much went cold from there. They couldn't get anything going. And the Suns, on the other hand, got it from everyone. Bridges was great. Torrey Craig had a huge dunk. Devin Booker had a monster three. And then the start of the fourth quarter, Chris Paul, who honestly in that first half just really seemed to be struggling, was an absolute master, a technician, if you like, to start that fourth quarter. Getting into his mid-range there, hitting those shots, finding guys outside in the pick and roll as well, and then hitting a three dagger over Paul Millsap. Kevin Harlan, a brilliant call last night from Kevin Harlan on the call, described it as squeezing their throat. And that's really what it felt like. It just felt like Chris Paul was like, okay, give me the ball. I'm going to close this one out and make sure that this is a safe one. He stayed until about 2.5 minutes left in the game, and it was an 18-point lead. And it was just, that's what Chris Paul, that's why the Suns traded for him, you know, to come over and show them how to close out these games in a playoff environment. I thought it was just a really fun game. And a couple of points I took out from it as well. I thought DeAndre Ayton probably wins the battle of the big men in this one. He couldn't really stop Jokic, but I don't think Jokic could really stop him at the other end either. I think Ayton going 20 and 10 on 9 for 13 shooting, you'll take that every time from the Suns. We know Ayton isn't a great defender, and Jokic is one of the toughest guys to match up on. And I actually thought, for Monty Williams, I thought Jay Crowder did a decent job just bodying Jokic. He's obviously giving up a ton of height there, mm-hmm. but I thought Jokic wasn't able to just sort of slip past him and get any of those easy buckets late in that third and fourth quarter there to try to keep Denver in it. So I certainly like him more than I like, you know, a Saric or a Kaminsky getting minutes there on Jokic. It's not easy for whoever it is, but I thought the Suns did a decent job, and I thought Jokic also just ran out of gas a little bit in the second half there. But if you're the Nuggets as well, I saw some good signs, and I think this one, while ended up being a pretty convincing victory for the Suns, I saw some good things as well. And I thought, you know, they tried to exploit Devin Booker on defense. I think that's going to be a focus of theirs going forward. And I just didn't think it was a terrible game. I just think it was that third quarter run, the momentum, fans back in arenas, Suns carried it into that fourth quarter, and then Chris Paul closed it out. So good fun game here, and a good win by the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, Tass, the Phoenix Suns crowd, it was hype. I mean, it was coming through on the broadcast. Like, that crowd was... You could tell they, you know, have not had a, like, sort of meaningful playoff game in a very, very long time there. That building was rocking, especially, like Lee said, when they went on that third quarter run, where Bridges, I thought, sort of did a lot of damage. And then in the fourth quarter, it was Chris Paul. He did this all season long, if you watch Suns games. Like, it was Chris Paul with a bunch of bench guys, usually at the start of the fourth quarter, building leads, putting games away. And that's what happened here in game one. But a really fun game, I thought.
It was a blast, and I think the MVP might be the audio technician in the building because, yeah, we're talking about how loud it was. The fans were very loud, but the audio technician does a great job of sneaking in the audio. He's still pumping in some audio there. I was listening to it with headphones because he was doing such a good job. It was such a nice level, never too high, never too low, always at the right time, because it did sound like the Suns were, fans were taking over. And this was a home court playoff win for me. The Nuggets have nothing to be ashamed of. They were playing so, so great. This series is going to be a blast. 10 guys who can make a play on the floor basically at all times, especially with the starters. It was awesome. And the Nuggets, yeah, had that lead in the third quarter, but it's a home court win, and that sometimes in the playoffs, when the crowd is rocking, when the audio technician is doing his job, yeah, you're going to have a great run. And that's what the Suns did in that third quarter. And everybody contributing, as Lee said, especially Mikal Bridges. It's like found money with him when he has such an incredible game, because when the Nuggets are out there looking at the perimeter scores for the Phoenix Suns, obviously you have to run out to Devin Booker and cover him. Obviously, with Chris Paul back, you got to go cover him. And Jay Crowder banging home shots, you have to cover him. But Mikal Bridges is the fourth option on the perimeter. You have to expect that Mikal Bridges will get some open shots just because of how many great players the Suns have. And he was taking guys off the bounce. He was hitting his three-point shots. The fact that he can come in and have a night like that where he ended up 8 of 12, I believe, that's perfect stuff. And the difference in this series might be Chris Paul being back. I mean, he didn't look like himself in the first round at all. And he had an incredible fourth quarter with 14 of his 21 points, yeah, where he took over. Nothing to be ashamed of from the Denver Nuggets. The one-on-one battle between Jokic and Ayton that Trey talked about coming into the series, you know, we'll get to, that was extremely, extremely key. That Ayton, everybody talking about, you know, Luka and Trey from the 2018 draft class during this postseason. While Mikal Bridges and DeAndre Ayton making their names known throughout this game, but this series is a blast, and it's just one game for me. I think the Nuggets will be back, but yeah, obviously the Suns got to feel damn good as well, getting contributions from 1 through 12, plus the audio technician. He's their sixth man.
Yeah, I guess.
Well,
so.
I guess their 14th man has got to be Guy Fieri, sitting courtside.
Yeah,
that's a good omen. If he's sitting courtside, that means your team could win the championship. I thought he was a Warriors fan, but apparently his son was rocking the Suns jersey. I imagine he has more than one spot on the West Coast. So sure, loaning a little star power there. That's when you knew it was over. But yeah, incredible performance by the Suns. And I thought Ayton, like you're saying, Lee, by not losing the battle with Jokic, he basically won the battle with Jokic. If they're going to play to a draw, that's an advantage, no doubt, for the Suns. He played basically the exact same minutes as Jokic last night. I think they both ended up at 36 minutes and 25 seconds. Only one personal foul call, and he was doing such a good job playing straight-up defense on Jokic that the Nuggets weren't able to get those easy double teams. Pass, pass, pass. Somebody's shooting a wide-open three, maybe Michael Porter Jr. from the corner. But if I'm the Nuggets, I'm feeling all right after this because that was a lights-out game for the Suns. Like y'all are saying, the crowd was hype. I'm seeing in the stream team skeets, they're saying that Phoenix Suns Arena greater than Madison Square Garden at this point. Maybe it was the audio technician, sure. I don't know, but after that alley-oop to Torrey Craig in traffic, they showed those kids going nuts. That's got to be the greatest moment of their lives as Phoenix Suns fans. That was wild stuff. Nuggets, though, don't panic. They get better as these series go on. They figure things out. They've been one of the most resilient teams in the league the past 2 years. Obviously, they came back from down 3-1 twice last season. They lost game one against the Blazers. They just got to have a little bit better attention to detail. I think Michael Malone said they gave up 8 and 1s last night. That can't happen. You got to play a little bit tougher. It'd be nice if Will Barton came back. It'd be nice if Michael Porter Jr. is healthy. But really, you just got to win one game in Phoenix. So, bad one for the Nuggets last night, but didn't seem like basically anybody was going to be able to beat the Suns.
Yeah, they were riding high there, especially, yeah, you're right. I'm glad you brought up that Torrey Craig oop. My God, I thought the roof was going to blow off the place on that one. I was surprised Torrey Craig went up and got that one.
Yeah, that was tough.
I mean, it was pretty high for Torrey Craig. I didn't know he had quite those hops in him, but he had 9 points, 7 boards in 15 minutes against his former team. He was in Denver for a while, of course, before making his way to Milwaukee, and they decided they didn't want him or need him at all, and maybe they could use him right now because we'll get to that series. But yeah, everybody on the Suns played incredible, because even Booker, like 21-8, picking his spots. You guys said 8-20-10. Chris Paul, Lee, you called him a technician, spot on. Like, his ability to just go pick and roll, switch hunting, right? Like, deciding on the court, like, who do I want on me here? Let's make this. Like, he really is like a chess master in that sense. Like, that's why he's called the point guard, because it's like his just control of the game and every piece on the board is pretty wild. You know, and he is looking healthier, like you guys said, because it was just mid-range jumper after mid-range jumper, usually after a couple switches to get the guy he wanted on him, and there was nothing they could do about it. And then if it was, the attention was on him, of course he's going to find the open guy as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's what was missing in those couple of games against the Lakers in game 2 and 3, where he just couldn't shoot. He didn't have that confidence in his arm. But again, last night in the fourth quarter, because it was still a close enough game that the Nuggets could have gotten back into it, and Chris Paul's like, there's just no way I'm letting anyone do this. And so he would dance with the big man, hit that mid-range, and then on the second chance opportunity with Paul Millsap there, you could see it coming. You could see he's going, I'm getting this shot up. You know, did a little dance afterwards, and again, that was one of those situations that just sort of felt, with that home crowd behind them, it was just a dagger, and there was still about 8 minutes to go in the game, but it just felt like, okay, Chris Paul is not walking off the court with a loss here tonight. So he is so incredibly fun to watch when he's at his best. You know, like a lot of guys, when they're just feeling it and they're in that groove and they decide how they're going to go about scoring or setting up their teammates, it's fun to watch. So yeah, this really does set up to be a fascinating series, though, because it certainly wasn't an embarrassing loss for Denver. It was just, they just sort of got outplayed there for, you know, a quarter and a half. It really wasn't even a quarter and a half. It was about a 12-minute to 14-minute stretch over that third period into the fourth period where they got outplayed, but that was enough for Phoenix to take this one. So interested to see how they respond to this one, the Nuggets, because as Trey was saying, they pretty much often lose the first game of a series, and then they start to figure out. It's almost like the LeBron strategy they lose. I mean, they you know, they do that and then things get going. So, but again, so enough good signs that the Nuggets are going to have another one, except for, you know, their backcourt wasn't very good, and then Monte Morris off the bench was pretty bad for them in this one. But
and he was fantastic in the Lakers.
Exactly,
series.
Exactly.
Yeah, excuse me, in the Blazers series. Yeah.
In the Blazers series, he gave them real punch off the bench, but just not last night. But that's okay. It's one game, first game of a 7-game series. So I expect a better performance from Denver in game two.
Yeah, you pointed out too, Lee, one thing that I thought was, you know, good for the Nuggets, I guess, was putting Devin Booker in action, and Aaron Gordon went at him multiple times and sort of had his way with him. I mean, he's obviously much bigger. I thought Aaron Gordon was aggressive. Now, the flip side of that is maybe the Suns are like, that's okay. We'll live with that any day of the week. Aaron Gordon's going to beat us? Are you kidding me? Sure, make the ball go to him as much as possible. Make him take as many shots. But if that's the strategy or not from the Suns' defense, I don't know. But he did play well, I thought, and put Booker in the basket a couple times because he's just way bigger than him.
Yeah, well, that's just one way they can try to exploit a mismatch there, because, and also you saw Gordon on Booker on the other end a couple of times as well. So that, you know, you can't have Jokic just have to control every single offensive possession. Other guys have got to say, okay, I've got Booker, I'm just going to go inside. Finished 8-14, 18 points. That's not a bad return there from Aaron Gordon. So I think you're just going to see it again. I mean, this is something we haven't seen so far for what Trae Young's had to do for the Atlanta Hawks. So I think in that aspect, Michael Malone's like, you know, we have to find other guys, have to be able to go out there and create a basket for themselves. We have to have other guys contributing to the offense. So I expect to see them try to do that more often, because Gordon's a big load there. I mean, he's got what? He's got at least 5-6 inches, I think, on Devin Booker. So you've got an advantage like that. You've got to try to exploit it.
Tass, do you think the Nuggets do need Will Barton or PJ Dozier back in this series, like to pull it out? Or can they do it even without them if those guys didn't play? And by all accounts, they might be back this series at some point.
Yeah, it's a good question because the Suns feel like they have more weaponry in every position. So, my first thought is, sure, the Nuggets could use some more offense, but I think they need more Joker. I don't like the offense going through Aaron Gordon very often. I don't think it makes a lot of sense for him to be their second leading scorer. That's a win for the Suns. I think Joker needs to have a bit of a better game. I mean, he was solid out there, but the ball was, doing a little – it was slipping through his fingers a little bit. He just didn't have a great Joker game, a 10 of 23. He can shoot better than that, and four turnovers. It just wasn't a perfect Joker game, and that's entirely fine. When you're on the road and it's a tough game, you just can't afford to have these little runs. Like at the end of the second quarter, they had a chance, the Nuggets did, to increase that lead, and Joker passed up a shot, or he was in the post actually with Jay Crowder, and he told Composito to go to the other side, and then they threw it way over. It was a crazy pass from the other side of the court to get it to the post to him, and he chucked it sort of off the side of the backboard. It was a bad shot on the near side, and then next possession it went through Porter Jr.'s hands. They just have to be sharper, and I get the idea. Hey, we need these guys back, but at the same time, what if they struggle for a game and a half or two because they're rusty? With the Suns, you just they're not going to falter. I don't think the Suns are going to beat themselves in this game. So I get the idea, but there's worry that comes with that, especially with Chris Paul. I mean, I think the sharp guys on the Nuggets just have to be sharp because it seems like Chris Paul is back, baby. It seems like they have another guy to help close a game. Devin Booker didn't have to close game one whatsoever. That Chris Paul was up, was handling the ball, up 16, 2:30 left. Devin Booker was looking for it. Chris Paul said, look at the clock. I mean, you could see on the ISO of him, on the close-up of him, we got time. Let's chill out. Let me dribble out. You can run around. We'll give it to you later in the possession. Devin Booker didn't have to be that guy. He's going to be that guy at some point. So some things to worry about. But, yeah, it's a good question about Will. And I would say no. I would say I'm just worried now that the Nuggets don't get one here in Phoenix. So, rust. Russ isn't a great idea right now for the Nuggets, for me anyway.
In bringing some of those guys back, yeah. And we did see them, like we said. Monte Morris was incredible in the last series. Austin Rivers had incredible moments in the last series. Composito had his moments. Had a beautiful pass in this one too, Lee. I'm sure you were geeking out over that one, that little over-the-head flick back to Joker. But yeah, I think they could really use a guy like Will Barton at this point, because you just like... Have you already gotten more than you even hoped for from some of those guys I just mentioned, like sort of the Nuggets reserves that have been pushed into these more starting minutes? And maybe, you're right, Taz, it could backfire, but I guess we'll see what happens in game two. I don't think there's any like word that he's going to be back for game two. Maybe it is the hope that they can get him back when they go back to Denver here for three or four. So I think that's what they said at the start of the series, somewhere in the middle. Maybe you could expect a Will Barton, maybe even a PJ Dozier back. More bodies. Yeah, at least give it a go, and if they look real, rusty or not healthy enough, then whatever, you just go back to what you were working with in the first round. But I think they could really, you guys, like, just Barton's energy alone, because you said it, there's so many guys out there flying around for the Suns, and that ball moves. He is athletic, and he can at least contribute a little bit just to the mayhem of this game, because it was back and forth, Trey. It was like right from the jump, it was like no rust at all with these teams in the first like couple of minutes in the first quarter. It was like, wow, this is awesome basketball. Now, I don't know if that was compounded by the fact that we just watched the Nets hammer the Bucks and we were like watched like 24 minutes of pointless basketball in the second half there. But the energy and just the execution, I thought, was pretty high from both these teams.
Yeah, no doubt. The first half looked like the series that we were expecting, and the second half looked like home court advantage was a real thing, because in that third quarter, once Bridges started heating up, that was the first time that the Nuggets really didn't respond to kind of a hit that the Suns had made that gave them the energy. They threw the oop to Torrey Craig, crowds going wild, and then Chris Paul took over there in the fourth quarter. That was really the Suns that felt riding the wave of the fans. It was really impressive, and, they just smelled blood in the water, and they went after the Nuggets, and the Nuggets weren't able to respond where they have been in the past. I'm with you, Skeets. Having more bodies will help, just so that when it's an Austin Rivers game, not in the good way, when he's got 7 points, you can try somebody else. Jamichael Green was one of the guys out there closing for the Nuggets last night. Part of that was because Michael Porter Jr. had a wrap on his back. Not a great sign if you're a Nuggets fan, but they had to have somebody out there. Maybe you would like to have it be PJ Dozier. That guy's a pretty solid defender, but he also hasn't played in a little bit. Maybe you would like it to be Will Barton, a little more juice off the dribble, also hasn't played in a little bit.
Yeah.
Tass is right, though. It starts with Jokic. He's got to be plus 30 every single game for the Nuggets to win this thing.
Yeah, it's pretty wild that, I mean, this is where he's at in his career already, Lee. He goes for 22-9, and it's like, it's just not good enough, especially with no Jamal Murray and not and little help against a great Suns team. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's fair when you're a superstar. We do it with Giannis. We do it with a bunch of guys. Like 22-9, meh. From you, recently, that's not amazing game. And Ayton deserves a lot of credit, though, because he might be strong enough, like young enough. He can get up and down the floor, of course, put a little pressure on Jokic that way, too, and just having him trying to keep up. That, you know, he deserves some credit for keeping at least Jokic in check here, and Trey going into the series was like, Ayton's got to stay out of foul trouble, and so far so good in game one, like you guys said, the only one foul there.
Yeah, well, and he only had three assists as well, Jokic, which just shows, again, I haven't broken it down as far as how many assist potentials he had out there as far as missed shots, but that's the serious thing I think that Monty Williams is trying to take away, is like, if Jokic is at his best and he's getting eight or nine assists and putting up 25, 30 points, I would say the Nuggets win a high percentage of those games. So they took away kind of both of those, really, you know, kept his scoring down and kept his assist down. And then you have to rely on other guys to get the points there. So I think that was just a really good strategy that that the Suns tried last night, and it worked. And again, it only worked really for that sort of, you know, 12 to 14 minute period, because in the first half it looked like the Nuggets were in complete control here without Jokic having to do it all. So you know, they just have to get contributions from everybody, have guys hit shots, and that's why I sort of don't think that you know, that by any means this game is going to play out like this for the rest of the series. You right. know, the Nuggets are going to have a counter attack, and then they're going to have guys who hit shots, and when that happens, the pressure is going to be on Phoenix. So, you know, it was a good battle, and you know, ultimately it came down, I think, to Chris Paul basically putting this game out of reach for his team, and now it's up to the Suns to sort of the Nuggets to find a way to counter that, and I think they will. So I think this one, I hope we get a 7-game series, because I think it could be 7 fun games, at least like last night.
My final note from this one, I don't know if anybody else has anything. It was fun to see Devin Booker replicate his pose, his signature lying on the ground, but like the little head up after the N1, because we saw that. That was on the game winner, right? Versus the, Clippers back in the bubble when they went 8-0. And, you know, stakes maybe, stakes higher, I guess, here in a playoff series, but, you know, it wasn't a game winner, but the N1 tray, and he went with the exact same pose. Like, it looks identical. I saw the identical photo, and I was like, when was that? Was that last year? No, that was last night. That's literally spot on.
Looked the exact same. Looks like he's going down one of those body slides at a water park. You know, you gotta keep your head up. Don't want to hit your head on the back of it. But a weird thing to become a signature celebration, just laying there and looking up to see what's going on. But I'm all for it. It was pretty funny to see a second time.
Yeah.
But he missed the free throw on it, too.
That's true.
Yeah.
Only you would bring that up. Only you.
Well, he missed 2 free throws last night. He's a beautiful shooter of the ball. But
indeed. You know. Any other notes from the Suns Nuggets game one? Anybody?
Well, I just got a question. How do we feel about incorrect grammar in a tweet that they throw up on the broadcast? Because I think they're doing a really good job of putting in some tweets, integrating tweets. Because usually, you know, that's a little forced. Oh, here's a tweet. Here's a guy. Here's a GIF. Ha, that's funny. But nice, slick interface, I think, at the bottom. It was Jamal Crawford's tweet that came up. It said, "I'm biased, but I think the Suns are a great team. I'm biased, B-I-A-S, not biased." Look, I'm okay with it. People make mistakes, but why don't you just Photoshop in an ED? I mean, why not?
Can't do that. Then we got fake tweets here, fake news.
Spell check it.
I like it. I do like it that they don't have to address it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's actually better.
For sure.
Like, there was a George Karl tweet off the top of my head, and like, yeah, you said Jamal Crawford. There's a couple other ones. But they're not like, the broadcast is not like, hey, let's look and read this tweet. It's not tweet of the night, you know? I'm all right with it.
Just a tweet that happened.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised Jamal Crawford hasn't tweeted, "I haven't retired yet, FYI." He's never going to retire. He'll be available on a roster when he's 54, I think, Jamal Crawford. Keeps himself in great shape. Keeps himself ready. So
he was on a podcast with David Aldridge on the Athletic NBA show. I think it wasn't more than a month ago, and he was basically saying, like, yeah, I'm ready. Because he is ready, obviously. But yeah, I get why you like the Suns, man. The Suns are great. DeAndre Ayton living to his potential. That's
what I was actually a little surprised that he was biased for the Suns too. I mean, Jamal Crawford did play for the Suns.
Yeah.
He played for a lot of teams, and I would say that the Suns were not his most notable team, very much at the end of his career, but I don't know. I guess you put that jersey on, you hear those fans, you walk in the stick, you'll never forget it.
I guess that was his last game, yeah.
His 50-pointer, yeah.
With the Suns. Right before he went to the Nets for a cup of coffee.
He played with one game with the Nets after. Yeah. Is he biased for the Nets as well?
No, only when he was good.
Didn't say it last night, yeah.
When you think of Jamal Crawford, what's the number one team you think of?
Clippers.
Yeah. Then what team?
Bulls, but he was drafted by the Bulls.
Yeah. I think Knicks, probably.
Yeah, I think I go Knicks too. I forgot he was drafted by the Bulls until trade deadline. Hey, he's played for a lot of teams, and he'll probably be back in the league.
So what do you do? 50 with the Knicks, 50 with the Suns, 50 with the Warriors?
Warriors, yeah, he got it with four teams. Oh. I think he's
Hawks,
the only
maybe?
Guy.
Holy crap.
Yeah, I think he's the only guy who's done it with four different teams, I think.
Oh, Lee's fact-checking. Here we go. All right, well, we'll take a quick break while you fact-check that, Lee. We'll find out after the break, but let's hear from our sponsors here.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's a butterfly effect for
real. This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey guys, whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. No sound effects, I don't have them loaded up, and I got too much going on over here. Good news guys, I finally got the notification from Shopify that the pickleball paddle I've had my eye on is back in stock.
Yes.
I have not purchased it yet. Oh. Why? Because I stink at pickleball! Got my ass handed to me yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, my God. So bad. Anyway, Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling scented soap or peddling pickleball paddles. How's that for alliteration?
Nice one.
Thank you. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen's, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. By the way, did you know Shopify is Canadian?
No, I did not know that.
Headquarters in Ottawa.
Wow.
Homer. Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify.com/NoDucks.
All right. I've been waiting for, what was that? I don't know. Good 2.5 minutes, Lee. You've been typing away like crazy.
Yeah,
I've got it. What's the outcome here with that Crawford stat?
In 2004 for Chicago versus Toronto, he had 50. In 2007 for the Knicks versus Miami, he had 52. In 2008 for the Warriors versus Charlotte, he had 50. And then the 51 against the Mavericks in his last game. Joining Karl Malone and Michael Jordan as only 39-year-olds with 40-point games and the oldest player ever with a 50.
So, give it up for Lee Ellis calling it four teams. I don't remember the Warriors one.
Was that his first one? Did I say?
Oh, no, definitely not.
Third one. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
You just read it,
yeah.
All right. There you go. Good Crawford stats there for you coming back from the break. Okay, let's get to the other game from last night. Not as exciting. Kevin Durant drops 32. Nets go up 2-0 in their series with the Bucks, 125-86. It actually wasn't even that close, Trey.
Yeah. Just yesterday, I pitched you guys the idea that the Bucks losing game one in a blowout to the Nets without James Harden was a good thing. Not a ton of pushback, I'll say. Not a ton.
Nope.
They shot terrible in game one. The Nets were extra good. Thinking, hey, game one, worst possible outcome, right? Nope. Game two happened, and I got nothing for you, Bucks fans. Literally the best thing that happened for Milwaukee last night is that they didn't trail by 50. 49, as Ernie Johnson was pointing out, never 50. Kevin Durant scored 32 points in three quarters. The Bucks tried a zone early in this game. Kevin Durant, though, he's 7 foot tall. He just shot right over the top of it. Best player in the world status was engaged fully last night. He zinged Jared Greenberg post-game. Kyrie Irving added an easy 22 points. The Nets went 21 of 42 from three-point land. The Sixers, they might be to Generation X, but I think the Nets are the rock because they layeth the smacketh down last night. This was horrible for the Bucks. Giannis looked lost. The Nets were not even close to guarding him, and even Marv Albert was calling him out for taking too many threes. Chris Middleton, Jrue Holiday, 30 points on 30 shots. The Bucks went 8 of 27 from 3. They basically tried to turn this into a shooting contest with the Nets. Advantage Nets. This is like a 1 versus 8 series so far. Not a 2 versus 3 with the possible NBA Finals champion coming out of this. A disappointing first two games in this series. And I don't know. Bucks need to figure out how to play basketball again or Bud's going to get fired before game 4.
I was just going to say, that's what people are saying. Can you fire your coach mid-series, Tass? It's never been done before, I don't think. Lee, I might need you to fact-check me on that. Budenholzer, will he be canned before games 3 or 4? What did you think? I mean, the Nets were pretty damn special and the Bucks were god-awful again.
How the f*** are they so unprepared for that game? The Milwaukee Bucks. Honestly. That to me looked like, look, game one, James Harden went out 43 seconds. Okay, that's an early loss there for the Nets. The Bucks knew that Harden wasn't playing. Mm-hmm. They have an advantage there with Giannis. Go inside, try to create something against Blake, even if Kevin Durant's on you there. It felt to me like the Bucks were basically like, Brooke Lopez was their best offensive weapon in that first quarter. Giannis and Chris Middleton went a combined 1 for 10 in that first quarter. Giannis didn't even take one close to the rim in the first quarter. That to me is on Giannis, of course. He's the player out on the court. But it's also on Budenholzer. Like, why aren't you saying, okay, guys, we're just going to pound this ball inside. Play after play after play. We're going inside. That's how we're going to score. We're going to put them under pressure defensively. Giannis, you're getting to the free throw line. You're going to shoot 25 free throws in this game. No, he shot 7, made 2.
Gonna make 8 of them.
I was gonna say, how many would he make of 25 free throws?
Like right now?
Of the problem, to be honest.
He's attempted 8 3-pointers in the series and 10 free throws.
Yeah,
I mean that's again partly on Bud, but it's also on Giannis to be like, what are you like? Go in there. Go in and have some sort of play. He had a little baseline fadeaway. Okay, he's hit that. Okay, at some point throughout the season. But in the first quarter, you've got to be inside, aggressive and attacking. And Chris Middleton, he came down, shot a 3, a rush 3, and then a fadeaway long 2 over who? Guess who he shot that over? I looked at it this morning because I couldn't believe it when I was watching it. Guess who would be the worst person to shoot a fadeaway long 2 over about a minute into the game?
Kyrie Irving.
Kevin Durant.
I was guessing Durant, yeah.
I mean, like, that's
he,
just...
Chris Middleton shot his pants in that game.
Of course he did, yeah.
He panicked big time after the first couple shots.
That's what I mean. Chris Middleton, Middleton doesn't get to the free throw line a ton, about four attempts a game throughout the season. He's been there for two free throws so far in this game. At some point, you think the Bucks are like, we've just got to get someone inside, just get a free throw, get to the line, do something. That was the most embarrassing performance from a team that legit thinks it's a contender last night. Budenholzer seemed completely lost, and he at no point was just like, guys, take the ball inside. Somebody take the ball inside. Put Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin threw down a dunk as if it was 10 years ago last night. He looked great. So I think this was a humiliation for Milwaukee, and they have to do some serious soul searching to turn this series around, because you can't go out and get punked by 50. It wasn't 50, but it was 50. I'm rounding up here.
49.
I'm rounding up here because they deserve to be humiliated completely by this when, again, James Harden sitting on the bench looking like a waiter out there. I thought he was going to start serving drinks to people in the first row. Because Kevin Durant, finished with 32 points.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant had the easiest 32 points of his life last night.
Yeah.
There was nothing out there. Kyrie Irving, I mean, he's great.
Are they supposed to do with this? I mean, in all honesty, when he looks like this Durant, 12 of 18, 6 assists, couple boards, whatever. Like, PJ Tucker is too slow.
Yeah.
Drew Holiday, who is a great defender, if you actually watch the possessions where he's on Durant, you're like, damn, look at him move. Look at him stay in front. Body him up a little bit. But he's just too small. Like, because then Durant just like, all right, I'll just shoot over you. And then, you know, Giannis got on him a couple times, and KD broke his ankles two or three times. I'm like, at that point, when KD's like, you know, pre-injury KD, at the height of his ability KD, there is no way. I don't know even what Bud's supposed to do in this situation. But make it a little more difficult, I get it. Like, but he just looked unstoppable to me, Durant, last night.
Good offense always beats good defense, no doubt about it. But if he puts up 32 and it's all on Giannis, you're like, well, that was the best chance.
Yeah, sure.
That was their best chance. Not PJ Tucker, had two fouls early. And PJ Tucker, he's looking like Danny Green on Trae Young out there. Sure, he's physical, moves his feet, but cannot contest those shots. And again, Durant, there's no like, oh, just do this and you'll stop Kevin Durant. He looks so in his groove last night. But come on, man. Budenholzer's got to do something and just say, Giannis, all right, he's yours, man. Do whatever you can. Because otherwise, we're just getting embarrassed and it looks like I have no idea what I'm doing. And sadly, that's it. I mean, game two, this was not technically a must win, but surely it was not a 49-point loss either. And this was over in the first half. Mm-hmm. This was I was disgusted with the Bucks' performance last night. This
sounds like you're going to ground the Bucks.
I just
no basketball until Sunday.
He's not angry. He's disappointed.
Yeah,
Like Roxana came down and said, "Oh, how's the game going?" I'm saying, look, Mike Budenholzer has forgotten more about basketball than I will ever know. He's an NBA coach, right? But I'm sitting here going, how can he not run anything to get Giannis just moving towards the basket?
Yeah.
Run four screens if you have to. Giannis, you just go inside. We're going to put the ball up high. You catch it, and you just flip it in. That's it, because they've got no one who can contest
it. Giannis decided not to go inside, too. He had Blake in front of him standing in his way, and he should have danced around him like he always does or gone through him and just allowed Blake to pick up a foul, because that's what would have happened, and he didn't. He chose not to.
He can also run a screen to say, all right, if Blake's there, we're just going to run somebody so you can get
inside. Giving the ball to Giannis 20 feet from the net, facing it, it's like the dumbest thing they could do. I'm with you on that.
And
we've seen this before, so it's nothing new.
When Nick Claxton came on, he's picking Giannis up, saying the three's there if you want it.
Yeah.
Giannis, I'll just pass it off to someone else. Giannis, come on, man. What is going on out there? Not one legit shot in the paint in the first quarter for Giannis. That is just, that's just outrageous to me. Outrageous.
Wow. Tass, are you as upset with Giannis and Bud and the Bucks as Lee Ellis is here this morning?
Oh, obviously. I'm furious. Danielle came downstairs and she asked, how's the game going? And I said, what an embarrassment. What an absolute embarrassment. I thought, listen, your stars got to play like stars. We can blame Coach Bud for not having his team go inside. Giannis did that in the first game, he had the option to do that in this game, and he chose not to. In that first quarter, Blake was standing there quite vulnerable underneath the hoop, and Giannis chose not to. I mean, maybe that's the coach just not having them sort of fired up for their game plan, but he's the superstar. Coach Bud, I don't think he's on the floor. You know, that Coach Belly is not out there. It's Giannis, it's Middleton, and it's Holiday. They have to play like superstars and to try and match the Nets. Now, maybe they tried to match them in a shooting competition, sure. but they just didn't do it very well. I mean, they shouldn't be in a shooting competition. Kevin Durant is the best offensive player in the last decade in this league, and he's going to get 30. Of course he is.
Yeah.
So Giannis has to do it his way, and Middleton has to play better, and they just have it. And I don't know if they really truly believe they're a contender. They beat the Miami Heat in that first game. It was a coin flip of a game, and they went up 1-0. It was an ugly, ugly game from the Heat, and then they got their confidence. But they haven't got their confidence in this series, and I don't think it's coming back. I don't see why it would come back, because I'm not sure they truly believe it. And Jrue Holiday is, one of everybody's favorite players. He's such a great player, such a good defender. But now he's got that max contract, and he kind of just he flies under the radar in terms of criticism. He wasn't a great offensive player in this game, and he hasn't been able to really find his game. One was better, but he's getting paid like a superstar, and the way the Bucks are constructed, where Giannis isn't necessarily going to have 35 or 40 every game because he can't shoot, because sometimes he doesn't dunk on everybody, because the playoffs teams build a wall against him. Drew's kind of got to be better. And they gave him the ball in the first play to try and find his flow. And they called a play for him, and he, he rimmed out. And then it was just kind of downhill from there for the entire team. And maybe that's on Coach Bud for not bringing them all together. But if I'm Giannis, being here year 8 in the league, it's just time to lay the smackdown, as The Rock does. he's got to bring it, blaming Coach Bud for Giannis not dunking on Blake Griffin, who is a billion inches shorter than Giannis, is, I don't know, it's a little short-sighted. Giannis knows how to dunk. Just do it.
Yeah, but yeah, Bud's got to make it clear. We're running stuff for Giannis. That's what you're doing. Giannis, you're getting the ball and you're going inside. That's what you're doing. You're not settling for these pissy little mid-rangers early in the game. If you're up 25, that's when you can have one of those mid-rangers. But early on, you've got to show the aggression. And that's got to come from Bud drawing up play after play, just saying, it's all going through Giannis. That's where he's our leader, and we're all going to flow off him. Then Middleton will get some shots. Then PJ in the corner can hit that. And then other guys get going. But it starts with Giannis. And if he's not being aggressive and he's not going to the hoop, then the other guys are kind of looking around going, well, I guess I have to score. And you saw Jrue Holiday hit a banker. That was, I think, their first field goal.
Yeah.
And it was just, that was kind of like, there's nothing else happening out here. I may as well shoot it. So Budenholzer just didn't seem to at any point show any sort of like, all right, we're mixing things up, we're changing this. It was like, all right, we're getting completely smacked in this one.
Yeah.
It was just an embarrassment for everybody.
Laura came home last night and she said to me, how are the games? I said, call your dad and say he can't be a Bucks fan anymore because my friend Lee Ellis is going to ground them and he's not letting Giannis shoot mid-range jumpers until they're up 25. Basically saying, hey, no dessert until you finish your vegetables, Giannis. But honestly, vegetables, Giannis. The guy needs to be at the rim every single time. We talked during the regular season. Remember, the Nets were laying off Giannis like crazy. We're like, are they going to do this? Are they going to do this? Because he was just kind of like taking the runway and getting into the rim and scoring. And that's what it's got to be. But I mean, that's a hard thing to do for four quarters every single game. But that's why you're the MVP. That's why you're the man out there. You got to live in the lane. And then, yeah, maybe once you're up 25, you get to take that delicious 15-footer. And maybe then, after you've seen a couple of shots go in at the rim, maybe it's a lot easier to make that shot.
You know what? The Nets, I know we say it a lot. They'll give Giannis as many threes and as many mid-ranges as he wants. You can shoot 25 of those. We don't care because you're not punishing us inside. And Giannis right now is saying, okay, fine. It's almost like what Westbrook has done in the past in the playoffs, where he gets caught up by saying, oh, you're giving me this? Okay, I'll just keep shooting it. And it costs his team. So, yeah, they have a look, again, it's down, it's 2-0, and they're both games in Brooklyn, so it's not the end of the road here for the Bucks. But my God, they have to come out with some urgency and some aggression in game 3, because James Harden, I think if you're the Nets right now, like, great, we get a few extra days here to rest him.
I know.
it's not like we got to get him back. It's like, make sure that hamstring is ready to go, because there's no need. We're not in trouble at the moment.
Yeah, Bucks did not do themselves any favors, too, by turning the ball over constantly there in the first half. It was a 9-3 difference. I mean, you're already playing a team that, like, might have the greatest offense of all time, even without Harden playing. and you're giving them the ball, and they scored, the Nets did, 14-0. They had the advantage in those points off of turnover, so that killed them too. And look, I want to give some credit to the Nets here. My God, is this team playing incredible. Without Harden, like KD and Kyrie, yeah, like ISO monsters whenever they want, but that thing is moving, man. Like, there's some action with Joe Harris and Kyrie that is, like, beautiful going on. KD finding guys. Everybody on the Nets hit a three, it felt like, last night. Like, every single guy that played, it felt like. I know that's not exactly true, but I think 9 Nets players ultimately hit one. They went 21 of 42 from three. That was a franchise record for threes made in a playoff game for the Brooklyn Nets, too. And this is just wild to me, Tass. I heard the Athletic NBA show say this. Think about, like, the Nets role players, reserves, whatever you want to call them, right? Coming into the season, after KD and Kyrie, you're like, okay, well, and then remove Joe Harris because he's a starter, but, like, it was like, who are, like, their best reserve players going to be? Well, it's going to be Spencer Dinwiddie. Okay, well, he hasn't played at all. He's torn ACL. It was going to be LeVert and Jared Allen. They'd probably be next in the pecking order. They get traded for Harden, who has barely played in this series. Who else was it going to be? You know, well, they acquire a freaking guy like Aldridge, who doesn't ultimately end up playing. Blake's given them great moments. It's just wild to think who their reserve guys were going to be and then who they've become, like Mike James and Bruce Brown and these guys. Like, it's wild. Like, they could, like, my point is, and I know two of those guys got traded for Harden, and you're going to make that trade any day of the week, but, like, all these guys we thought might be the reserve players are not. It's all a bunch of other names who casual fans don't even know who the fuck these guys are. Like, who the hell is this guy? Mike James? The guy that played for the Raptors? No, nope. It's a completely different Mike James. It's just amazing to me that Nash and his team, along with the stars in KD and Kyrie and Harden, of course, when he was playing, have got all of these guys buying into their role, like your Claxtons and so on. Everybody is playing their role perfectly on this team right now. And, you know, I'm looking like I'm going to be $100 lighter in my wallet in a second here.
She gone.
They look incredible because it's not just Kyrie and KD, like, having to carry them, you know, and which they can do in games where maybe those guys are struggling to hit their shots or not contributing. That's the crazy part to me. It's like, oh, we have stars that could also get us the victory if we just have to solely lean on them. It's wild. You must be feeling
ELE.
Good.
Everybody loves everybody on this team. The two concerns coming into the season were that the Nets didn't have enough depth and they wouldn't have enough basketballs and they wouldn't have enough chemistry. No concerns with any of that right now. Yeah. Everybody on their lineup can play. You know, they finally send in their garbage time lineup, and it's Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot, name Lee loved to say at the beginning of the season, a guy who was playing rotation minutes in the playoffs last year. It's an incredibly deep team because Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni, for the entirety of their careers, have gotten great performances from role players by just saying, hey, go play your game.
Yeah.
As long as you play your game and play hard and do what you're supposed to do, you're going to keep getting minutes. Who cares if you miss a shot as long as it's open?
Yeah, that's a good point. Can we, can the Bucks just fire Budenholzer right now and then get D'Antoni from the Nets bench and have him coach the Milwaukee? And maybe we have a series here in game 3 and 4. Why not? Come on. Yeah, let's get
honestly,
crazy.
Honestly, I wouldn't mind seeing D'Antoni on the Bucks just to see what he can do with that offense because, you know, that's what D'Antoni does. Everyone seems to score 20 points a game and they just need something right now. But there was that three that Kyrie had last night, sort of a pull up in transition, and he just banged it in. And it just that like at no point did the Nets seem to take their foot off the gas either in this game until it was obviously a complete blowout. But that was the other thing is they weren't like, hey, listen, let's just even give them a little bit of hope here. Budenholzer was great. He didn't have to play his starters. 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, he yanked most of his starters. So they got rest. They'll be nice and fresh for game 3, which is what he loves. But that's what I like. I thought from the Nets, it was just like, we're just going to keep pounding you until you submit. And that's exactly what happened there. And I think it was Stephen A. Smith who on Twitter was saying, like, to pull your starters game 2 with 9 minutes to go, that's humiliating for your team. And Budenholzer had a lot of questions. He answered a lot of those in the first round. But, man, they are back now, and he's got a very short time frame to answer those, or else there's no way he survives if this team gets swept. Absolutely no way whatsoever. He probably doesn't survive even if they lose the series. If they can stretch it to 7 and lose, you know, with a bit of dignity, then perhaps he can. But they didn't have any dignity last night. They were just a complete embarrassment to themselves.
Yeah, I saw Zach Cram tweeted, Tess, the Nets are now up to 50, 44, and 91 shooting splits as a team this postseason. 50 from the field, 44 from 3, and 91 at the line as a team. in the entire playoffs. I mean, I know they're only like, how many games have they played here? Seven? That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's really incredible. So it just proves how everybody is knocking down shots and getting it in the flow, really.
Yeah, no Jimmy Harden yet either. They would be even better. Yeah, they're starting, you know, Bruce Brown in his place, and he was 6 of 10 yesterday. It's a testament to the coaching staff and especially the leaders in Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving getting everybody involved and not forcing it. Durant and Kyrie Irving don't force anything on this team. And it wouldn't be questioned if they did, because it's their right to do so, because they're amazing and they could. But you're seeing a different Kyrie from last year than when he was kind of forcing it a little bit on the Nets squad without Kevin Durant. Top to bottom, Nash is a coach. He's a real coach of a real basketball team here. He's not just rolling out the ball. Everybody who they've picked up throughout the season, like an Alize Johnson, even Reggie Perry getting a few points yesterday. Then with a Mike James, the point by Trey about Mike D'Antoni really empowering his guys and Nash doing the same to just say, just go shoot, man. Go have a one-on-one. A little matchup, because that's what your game is, Mike James. Alize Johnson, you're going to chip in this way. Bruce Brown, you're not going to take a shot in the mid-range because you can't, but you can shoot threes and you can dunk. Everybody right. knows their role, and even guys who were part of the rotation last year, like Timothy Luwalu-Cabarrot, are not, because they don't fit in right now, because there's just so many freaking good players on this team. And Jeff Green is out, who we thought would be kind of important to be able to guard Giannis, but best team of all time? Sure, why not? Best offense. It feels like the best offense of all time.
Best offense? Okay, yeah. Man, there's a case to be made there.
Bruce Brown took 10 shots last night, 8 in the paint, and made 5 of them. Just pointing that out. That's all.
So that's what you want from Giannis, Bruce. Is what you're looking at.
I'm just saying, like if he can get into the paint and take 8 shots and make 5 of them in the first half, I think Giannis can do the same.
Yeah, it's one thing to get beat by a guy named Kyrie, a guy that goes by the nickname the Slim Reaper.
Mm.
It's another thing to get beat by a guy named Mike, a guy named Bruce, a guy named Nick, who's kicking your ass up and down the court, right? That's going to sting a little bit.
Yeah.
What is this, a softball league?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Mike James, basically, they called him up from Europe and said, hey, you want to come and play for us? And he's like, yeah, all right, why not? And he's out there giving them good minutes. He's been a decent pickup for him.
Yeah, well, in the entire history of the NBA playoffs, 430 teams have found themselves trailing 2-0 in a series. 28 of those teams have managed to make a comeback. Lee, you do not sound high on the Bucks' chances of figuring this out in Game 3, let alone the rest of the series, it sounds like.
I hope I'm wrong, but they just didn't even compete last night. That's the real problem for me. It's like Chris Middleton's had two shocking games.
I am never voting Chris Middleton to an All-Star game again. I'm not going to be fooled. I don't care what he does in the regular season. I told you he was the most important player in this series. I took you through his past shitty playoff performances, especially series where they lost, and the number of times he just never shows up. I'm done with him. I know he's good. He's a great regular season player. He's not that great in the playoffs. I mean, I hear as a Raptors fan time and time again, oh, look what Pascal Siakam's doing. Where's Pascal Siakam? Where's him? I mean, Jesus. He gets buried. I know Raptors fans are crazy. But where is, do Bucks fans do this for Chris Middleton?
Mm.
We did nothing. I know he ended up getting some points. His box score looks okay at the end. He was 0-for-8 to start this game. You said it, Lee. He was panicking, with shots I've never even seen Middleton try and take,
and that,
let alone hit. And then he was turning the ball over, too. He was shook.
Because I don't think it's wow, Durant's just shut him down. It's you're just taking these silly shots and not making them, and then, losing the ball. And they need him to be out there and be aggressive. The same thing. He didn't even get to the free throw line once last night. Come on, man. Anyway,
come on, man.
Look, listen. I've seen a couple of times I didn't think the Raptors were going to come back against the Bucks, ironically, a couple of years ago. I thought when the Cavs, of course, came back from the Warriors down 3-1, they lost those first two games. They lost game 2 by 30, and they looked completely embarrassed. Now, Draymond got suspended, Bogut injured, things happened. But so it can happen.
You thought the Lakers were going to obviously roll over the Suns there early in that series? Yeah.
Now they were 0-2 against the Mavericks last round.
Yeah, it's true. So it can happen. Things can turn around. But again, it's you have to change drastically from game 2 to game 3. So they're capable at home. They won 2 games and no James Harden toward the end of the season. So they can do it. But
But yeah, Giannis was not a monster in those games.
I picked the Nets to win this series, you know, so I was just really pissed off that they just didn't compete from the start this game last night. You know, the Nuggets last night kind of just got overrun. A bit of an avalanche happened, but they fought. They battled. It was a good game. The Bucks didn't compete last night.
Anything to add, gentlemen, to this game two blowout or this series moving forward? Tass, have you already figured out how you're going to spend your $100 that I'm going to be paying you? And just so everybody knows, the bet is not this series. I mean, Tass needs his Nets to then beat, you know, either the Sixers or the Hawks to win Conference.
Trae Young might save you $100.
My last hope might be Ice Trae. But anyway, have you already figured out what you're going to do with that money, Tass? I'm just curious.
No, I don't count my dollars before they're hatched. I can't wait. I can't wait to spend that in one go.
Oh,
what can I buy on NBA Top Shot? A half of a mom, a half of a bitk, a half of a duck, a half of a mom? Yeah, I can get a mom, I guess.
Yeah, you get 10 Simons probably.
Yeah, the wedgie moment that is Top Shot.
Wow.
Okay. Let's get to the Coach of the Year news, and we'll look ahead to tonight's game, but got to take one final break to hear from some more sponsors.
Well, hold on. What do you mean we're not going to be able to try it? I thought the homework assignment was you give us the recipe and we all do it.
Oh, wow.
Make it a lot of
work. Like a master class.
Thought it was going to be me just making it there in front of everyone, and then I'll sip it and, you know, and then I can pass it on and say, okay, this is the recipe. You guys can try it. So
yeah, you do need to do a trial run on it. You're right.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So,
All right. So we'll just have to trust you whether or not it tastes good.
Yeah. Yeah,
but we're going to be judging the appearance of it, how long it takes you to make it, because that usually takes a couple hours. Try and do it under 15 minutes if possible.
Yeah. Oh, well, you want to have some fun. I'm going to watch Cocktail tonight with Tom Cruise and Brian Brown and Elizabeth Shue just to see if I can get some skills on how to like flip and twist, turn, shake it.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you try and do the speech from Cocktail in the bar?
What is that? I haven't.
I don't know it off the top of my head. I'm just saying, look it up if you're going to watch the movie.
I know. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Try your best. Okay. That is Happy Hour this Thursday night. Yes, it's back. It's been a while since we've done that. And we got Jim Beam coming on to help us out with that. Love it. Perfect. Synergy there. Jim Beam for an NBA Happy Hour, a little watch party with no dunks. Sounds good. All right. Some news before we go, guys. For the second time in his career, Tom Thibodeau has been named the NBA's Coach of the Year. The Knicks coach who led the team to a 20-win improvement this season. He just edged out Suns coach Monty Williams by a total of 11 points, while Jazz coach Quinn Snyder finished third. And, TK will know this. Tibbs also won the award in his first year with the Bulls back in 2011. So, Lee, were you surprised at all by this? I'm going to share on the stream team here the coaching breakdown. Because it's interesting because Monty Williams actually had more first-place votes than Tibbs, but total points, it goes to Thibodeau there in a very tight race. But were you shocked at all?
Not shocked. I mean, I think it was going to come down to one of those two guys. I personally chose Monty, but I'm not angry that Tibbs won it. I thought he did a fantastic job there in New York. He really got them playing good, strong, solid basketball at both ends of the floor. Obviously disappointed that the season sort of flamed out for them in the playoffs there, but a very, very deserving candidate. And I think this also, just the closeness of the voting between those two, shows just how they both had really strong cases. And I guess it came down with the voters just like, what did you value more? The improvement of the Knicks from being pretty much a disaster to a home court advantage in the first round, or did you sort of see like the Suns and think, well, they kind of were expected to make the playoffs, but I don't think many people had the Suns finishing second in the Western Conference, so that's why I chose Monty Williams. But you know, Thibs did an incredible job there in New York, and Knicks have got to be happy, because I thought it was a bit of a risky choice bringing in an old guy who's kind of stubborn and stuck in his ways, but he showed a little bit of flexibility this year and got a lot out of his players. Of course, Julius Randle's already been named Sixth Man of the Year, and Derrick Rose had a very strong finish to the season. So lots of positives out of there to take out of this season from the Knicks, and Thibs winning Coach of the Year is one of them. Now the challenge will be, how does he improve this team next season going forward? Because I think there'll be some personnel changes, but I think Thibs has shown that he still can coach in this league.
Yeah, what do you think, Tass? Was this East Coast media bias going here with Tibbs getting more votes than Monty Williams, or maybe even Quinn Snyder with what they did out West?
How dare you? Right. Tibbs deserved it, don't you think?
I mean, look, we thought it was going to be one of those three guys, so I don't know how you could be all that upset. But I do think there might be some East Coast media bias, where you're watching Knicks games more. You're seeing the team more if you're on the East Coast. I mean, I don't know the breakdown of all the voters, like where they are, but my gut says maybe there's more on the East Coast.
Bunch of Lee Ellis's going to bed early.
I think maybe a small part. And maybe with the Monty Williams thing too, is like, I think a ton of credit, and probably rightfully so, goes to Chris Paul. They're like, well, Chris Paul is also sort of a coach on the floor. But I'm not upset. I assume you're not either.
No, I think the biggest gap between expectations and performance was the Knicks. I think most people, if you look at that roster of the Phoenix Suns, even in the Western Conference, was that they should make the playoffs. And yeah, two is way higher than people thought, for sure. But the Knicks going from low lottery to fifth seed, that's four usually seeds. Who gets the
coach. They're a whole team. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, well, whatever. That's a really stupid rule as well. The Hawks win the division. Why aren't they the fourth seed if they have the exact same record as the New York Knicks? Tiebreaker, that's dumb. Anyway, they have the exact same record. It's the biggest jump, I think, and that's why Coach of the Year is always given to that person. It's always given to the person most likely, in most situations, that's the gap between expectations and performance. So that's understandable. I mean, I was a Monty guy for a long time, but Tibbs probably got more out of his personnel than extracted the absolute most, every single drip out of his personnel than Monty did.
What do you think, Trey?
I think this was the perfect vote because Tibbs won for this season, like everybody's saying. The Knicks came back with basically the same roster they had last year. The main change was bringing in Tibbs and immediately having an identity that worked out and that the team was committed to for the entire year. But also Monty Williams did kind of win this as well, getting the most first place votes. And I think he may have even showed up on the most ballots. It's just the breakdown of it worked out differently. And I think that's fair because Monty Williams has probably been the coach of the year, but only if you include the past two seasons. You get a little credit for what happened in the bubble last year and taking that momentum from that 8-0, adding Chris Paul, and continuing it on this year to have an incredible season to build up a team that also has an identity, but he's not going to get quite as much credit because we saw the Suns do pretty well in the bubble last year, and obviously they added Chris Paul, who kind of gets Coach of the Year votes as well. So it's almost like there are two winners here, but for me, ultimately, I probably would have voted Tibbs as well just because the expectations were so low for the Knicks this year. For them to actually host playoff games, pretty impressive.
Yeah, the Suns' expectations, I feel like it ran the gamut, right? I think there were some people that were very high on the Suns coming into the season, like, hey, maybe they will be like challenging for a top four seed. I don't think most people had them at second, don't get me wrong, but I think there were people like saying, yeah, fourth or fifth maybe in the West is doable. I think a lot more people said they'll be in the play-in race, Lili. There definitely probably were people still saying no. Don't buy into what happened in the bubble. They won't be a playoff team. They're still a couple years away. So like that, it was all over the map where most people, because it's the Knicks and 20 years of like futility, people are like, yeah, maybe they'll be in a play-in race. Probably not though. And then here they were having at least home court advantage there in the first round. And like Trey said, having an identity and winning just a ton more games than they did last year, which of course is impressive. And Tibbs deserves a lot of credit. So that was pretty amazing. They got two of the awards here though. What awards do we have left, by the way? MVP, which we know we're just waiting on giving it to Jokic, and
Defensive
Player of the Year. That's right. So it'll be interesting to see if Gobert wins that again. Simmons sneak it out. We will see. I'm sure we'll find out probably, I don't know, by the end of the week or if not early next week. Let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Jay Dizzle, Tweet of the Night, man.
Yeah, Yarder. Tweet of the Night. Thank you. It's actually an Instagram of the night, and it's actually from a couple of days ago, but it... It's really simple, actually. It's from none other than Tim Burton. Yes, the Tim Burton, not that other guy who's the film director. This is Tim Burton, my friend Tim Burton.
Okay.
And this is a picture. It's just a picture for the audience at home. He's just relaxing and enjoying his cottage. Gross. Look at the view. And yes, his foot is in frame. Now, listen, on this show, for literally years, I've been hearing about old eight toes. Here's a picture of his foot. He's actually got five toes, but they're fused together. Well, I'm going to enhance, go back to Tim Burton's photo.
Okay.
Have a look at this.
Oh, my God.
Have a look at this.
Nice of him to bring a six pack to the cottage.
That's right. He has six toes on both feet. This is not old, new 12 toes. New 12 toes.
Wow.
And where am I going with this? I don't know. It's a weird pissing contest. My friend has 12 toes, while Lee, your friend's, only has 8 toes. So,
oh, they're combined for a complete set there, JD. 20, so...
There are a couple of fusers there, JD. It looks like the second and third toe.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's goodness. Amazing. Oh, my God. His feet are, like, insanely wide because of that extra toe in the mix. Tass, like, could you imagine trying to get this guy's shoes at a Foot Locker back in the day?
Sport Check,
this guy's
man.
Wearing... God, I always say Foot Locker.
Yeah.
New Balance, extra wide, for sure.
Yeah. You'd get him in those double E's or quad E's. Matty Austin is looking at those. Thinking, wow, those are sweet feet. Matty Austin, what is he? What chunkers was he wearing? Those Azures, what were those called?
Yeah.
Alta, maybe?
Alta,
maybe
the bricks.
His toe box on those shoes was like that toe box that we just saw new 12 toes.
Ironically, I think Tim Burton would be a good character for a Tim Burton movie with those 12 toes. So maybe there's something in it for him.
Fascinating tweet of the night. Yeah. Don't throw that in air quotes, but it's great. That's great. Shout out to Tim Burton.
Yeah,
I know he's not listening, but
definitely not. But no. You know, maybe I'll send him this, and maybe you know, he might enjoy it. He might not. I don't know.
I was gonna say, does he have a personal or a private Instagram account? Like, did you just blow
up
his
toes? That's a good question. That's I probably should have reached out to him before I posted a picture of his foot, but. Yeah, what are you going to do?
Oh, well.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Too late. Okay, tonight's games, two on tonight, TNT, game two, Hawks-Sixers, excuse me, and then game one between the Clippers and the Jazz. Yes, that's in Utah. Just quickly here before we wrap up, one thing to watch for in either of these games, TK.
I want to see Ben Simmons on Trae Young from the start. Sounded like he wanted the matchup after game one. He should be the primary matchup, you would think. Obviously, Tybalt should get some time as well, but we don't want to see Danny Green and Seth Curry trying to guard Trae Young. The key will be Simmons staying out of foul trouble. When he finally did start guarding Trae there in the third quarter of game one, picked up a couple of fouls in just 3 minutes, but he's definitely the guy who's got the best chance on the Sixers with the size, the quickness, and the length to really challenge some of Trae's shots, whether it be a step-back three or one of those little pull-up floaters he likes to shoot. Mm-hmm. Ben Simmons really needs to put his stamp on this game.
Tass, same question. Either of these games, what's something you're really going to be focusing on tonight?
Well, I can't wait to watch the Jazz in the fourth quarter against Kawhi and the Clippers, because will Donovan Mitchell try and take over, or will the Jazz try and do what they've done a lot of the season and do it by committee? It's the classic best player versus best team scenario. So yeah, the end of the game there, is Rudy going to be able to take away a bit of Kawhi, and is Donovan Mitchell going to be able to take everything he wants? It's going to be a great series. We got four series, one's a dud, which is, we should just hope that we've got three other good series.
The one we thought was going to be like the finals matchup happening in the second round. Yeah, that one, unfortunately, right now is the dud. But the other ones are shaping up, hopefully, to be pretty good. Do the Sixers need to win tonight, Lili, for them to escape the Atlanta Hawks, who are playing fast and loose?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know we just saw the Clippers come back from losing the first two at home, but it certainly wouldn't be the way that Doc Rivers would like to come to Atlanta with his team in a 2-0 hole. Yeah. Because if Ben Simmons does go on Trae Young and the Sixers still win, then where do the Hawks still win? Where do the Sixers go from there? So this one is shaping up, though, to be a pretty interesting series. Because what will Joel Embiid look like tonight? I mean, I know he wasn't 100% the other game, but if they can get Clint Capella off the floor, then that really does leave a hole, I think, for the Atlanta Hawks, because it's basically Gallinari. Who's going to maybe get some minutes there, and Okongwu as well. So that really should play into the Sixers' strategy somewhat. So will Joel Embiid try to do that? I know Capella, I think, finished with 5 fouls in game one, but if you can get him off the court early, that might just open things up a little bit. So we'll see. I'm very excited for this one. I was excited for last night, though, too, and I was disappointed and furious and angry this morning. But I've got a little bit more faith in the Hawks and the Sixers.
You never really said, what did Roxy think of your Budenholzer rant? Was she agreeing with you, or did she just walk out of the room?
I think she was just being the good wife, asking the question, but not really listening for the answer. Just like, oh, yeah, okay, I got to go to bed. You know, it's like 7:45.
Okay. Well, hopefully she'll be watching tonight. We'll be back tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, live here on YouTube to break down Game 2 Hawks Sixers and Game 1 of the Clippers Jazz. Make sure you join us if you are a Stream Team member. Smash that like button, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube, and yeah, leave a comment below the video. Help us defeat the algorithm. Back later today, Trey and I are Top Shot Trey, Showcase Skeets with a little Top Shot Hot Boys. I didn't get a pack, so I will be living vicariously through TK's opening. But we do some moment giveaways if you're a Top Shot Hot Boy and Girl. So come join us 4 p.m. Eastern live on YouTube, give or take. Just make sure you subscribe so you know when we're going live. And then, yeah, Beach Step in tomorrow afternoon after our daily show. Get your questions in, nodunks@theathletic.com. Tweet them in. At No Dunks Inc. Tess, is the computer okay? Mike's okay? Everything? After everything fell over there? That was amazing. Surprising. It was like the Blair Witch. I thought something was happening.
Yeah, how did it look?
It looks incredible. Wait till you play it back, man. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait.
We could hear you the entire time.
Yeah, the phone came in handy.
Yeah.
At least for something.
No. Oh, the foam that had fallen off the wall. It, like, the computer.
Well, yeah, I've got a collection. It's like a Tim Burton movie back there behind the computer. It's just sort of a hodgepodge of crap. No disrespect to Tim Horton. Tim Horton. Tim Burton.
Got a double of foam back here.
Freaky deaky.
Yeah. Imagine handing over a Tim Horton's cup to a guy with six fingers instead of six toes. Does he have six fingers on each hand too, JD?
No, it's just the toes.
Just the toes. Yep. All right. Well, we got new 12 toes. Shout out to old eight toes. That's a 20 right there, and you add them all together. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and remember, don't let new 12 toes fool you. The most important toe is the thumb toe.
Embrace the day, people.
Every day.